Hey, welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event on Sunday Morning. I'm Jason Agnew, and I'm just here to introduce what you're about to hear. You see, each week, not only do we do a Sunday Night podcast, but along with that, we have a whole bunch of different Patreon podcasts that come out that are available to you at patreon.com/SNMEradio for just a dollar a week, and you get everything. $4 a month. That's it. So considering how great AEW Double or Nothing was last night, I wanted to put a sample up of our review show of AEW Double or Nothing. And don't get me wrong, we're going to be talking about it tonight. Myself and Bartender Dave are going to be covering it on the actual Sunday Night's Main Event. But last night, right after the show and off the air, Dan the Mouth of Ransky and Joe Aguinaldo, affectionately known to all of our Patreon listeners as the Old Fucks, reviewed this show, and it was so great, I wanted to share some of that with you right here. So here is a sample of the Old Fucks podcast reviewing AEW's Double or Nothing.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Ladies and gentlemen, you get a very excited Old Fuck here on the podcast tonight. Welcome to another edition of All Elite Wrestling Weekly here, as part of the Sunday Night's Main Event Radio family. Myself, Dan the Muscle Ransky, along with Joe Aguinaldo. I mean, obviously, Joe, I was very excited going into this show, but I'm even more excited coming out of it because I thought it was a fantastic show, and they did tons of great things to keep me interested. Let's just quick off the top of your head. Yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down, good, bad, ugly.
Oh, absolutely a thumbs up. I mean, it was like you said, I was pretty excited about the show like you were, and you know, it didn't disappoint. I was overall very, very impressed with the product. And I'm sure we'll get into that for the most part, but yeah, yes. Definitely a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a historic night, the beginning of the promotion, their first big show, and basically knocking it out of the park, man. Like, we'll get into it, but let's.
Yeah, like the one thing I will say though, like just as like I saw the weigh-in and the press conference, right?
Yep.
You know, I watched it before the show, and I even posted about this on the board. And I got a little worried, admittedly, because when I looked at the production values of that mm-hmm. YouTube video, I was like, whoa, mm-hmm. like this does not – like the content was good. You know, it was very in line with the storylines and stuff. But I was like, wow, like I really hope that this isn't what the production value is like. And thankfully – someone piped in and said, no, like, this is the Fight app, and this is, like, StarCast. It's not AEW doing it. I'm like, oh, right. Thank God, right? Because yeah. that actually had me worried for a little bit.
And that's a good place to start. That's a good segue. Let's talk about, before we get into the actual matches and what happened on the show, let's talk about the outside non-wrestling elements, and that is the commentary and the production value. Now, you said the production value, I was literally blown away. I thought it was amazing. The cameramen were on everything. You had several replays during the match. At the end of the match, you got highlight reels with all the big moves and stuff. And I just thought, and, you know, never any issues with audio. You could always hear the commentators. You could, the crowd was mic'd really well. I mean, the crowd was just ballistic for almost the entire show. Mm-hmm. But I thought in terms of production, and even the look of the set, okay, it may not have been on quite the level of a WWE, but it still looked really good. And it was interesting because it looked, I guess what I would call somewhere between, say, Ring of Honor, TNA, and WWE. They did kind of carve out their own niche with the look as well by not going, it looked better than, say, a Ring of Honor or TNA show to me, but, you know, not on the level of WWE. But overall, production value, look of the set, presentation, timing, I thought all that stuff was great.
You know what? It's so funny you say that because I wrote in my notes, production value of the show was good. Was it WWE level? Not quite, but I could see elements of the WWE and WCW, and I said it definitely looked better than ROH or an Impact show. So I 100% agree with you.
I don't think it needs to be on the same level with the WWE. It has. I mean, you have to have the essentials. You have to have good cameramen, and you have to have someone in the truck running the switcher that knows when to make those switches in the with the cameraman to capture all the action. Like I didn't feel there were any spots tonight where I went, oh, the cameraman was in the wrong spot, or they didn't catch that dive, or they didn't catch that spot. I thought everything was captured really, really well, and I just was super impressed. And also, even simple things, the graphics used.
Yeah, I thought the graphics looked amazing when they would put them up prior to the matches or whatever, when they were doing like the vignettes, you know, before the matches. That was one of the things I wrote down right away, was the graphics look great.
Yeah, and just the fact that you got lots of replays in the recap after the match was over. I just thought they had all the things you need the most to make it work, as you would see later in the show. Now, the other thing we should talk about, because I mean, this was major bone of contention going in for myself and many wrestling fans, and that's the commentary team. We got Alex Marvez, Jim Ross, and Excalibur. I guess everybody feels a three-man team is the way to go. Personally, I would have really liked to have seen AEW break away from the pack and go with a two-man team. And actually, I think it was proven tonight that a two-man team would probably be good if those two guys were. And I'm going to admit it, I was completely surprised because I was skeptical going in. But if you moved Alex Marvez out of there and you just kept JR and Excalibur, and I'm sorry, Excalibur, MVP of the night when it comes to the commentary. This guy was just fantastic. He's just got a very natural way of speaking. He gave us all the backstories, you know, with the six women Japanese match. He gave us all the backstories, gave us all the information on the characters. And in other matches, you know, with the Bucks and the Pentagon and Phoenix, he knew the backstory, told us all about it. I thought he did a great job. And JR, I think because he's more in an atmosphere where he feels comfortable and he likes what they're doing. And I don't know if Excalibur worked with him in advance or just being with Excalibur was enough, but it certainly was obvious that as the show went on, JR really starting to loosen up and he got a bit more focused. And I thought by the end of the show, he was doing really good. What did you think about the commentary team, Joe?
I pretty much agree with you, with the exception of one thing. So, I think JR sounded the best that he sounded in a long time. I also agree that the chemistry got better as the night went on. Cause I'll admit, like at the beginning, so let's start with the pre-show. Like, with Alex Marvez and Excalibur on the pre-show was really, really awkward. And
there was no JR on the pre-show.
Yeah. And there were times where I remember and I can't remember exactly what he was talking about, but Marvez came up and said someone's name like two or three times and then finally got to his point. And I was like, that's not good.
Yeah.
Then when JR came up, it certainly helped because, he didn't have to do all the heavy lifting in terms of knowing all the backstories and stuff. That's what Excalibur was for. But I actually thought that as the night went on, and I'm talking like when we got to about the Cody Dustin match, I thought Alex Marvez found his place in the three-man booth. But I Excalibur, definitely the MVP of that group. Like, had it not been for him in the six woman tag match, the Japanese match, man, that could have been a cluster if it hadn't been for him. You know what I mean? but he kept like, he was like, oh, you know, like that's her mentor. And she's, you know, she's got this move on her mentor. And like, this is so great. And like, Excalibur was excellent. I'm so impressed by that guy. I mean, I've known he was good. I knew he was good. I didn't know he was that good. And again, having a guy like JR, because again, JR didn't have to know who, you know, Sheeta was or whatever, or you know, like any of those wrestlers.
Yeah.
He just said, oh, look at the physicality, look at the athleticism. And then
right.
Excalibur would jump in and say, yeah, you know, like this is where she learned this from. And this is, you know, like, so I love both of those guys, but I did think Alex Marvez did find his place eventually. But yeah, at the beginning, man, he was so awkward.
To me, he just felt like that kind of classic third wheel that you sometimes get with these three-man commentary teams, where you have one guy that's like, it's like Percy Watson in NXT or even Byron Saxton to a certain degree. It's just, you kind of going, to me, I just kind of going, end up going, why is this guy here? Like, you have two capable broadcasters. You don't really need a third voice. And I was really hoping that AEW was going to break from that and get away from the third man thing. But best of all, you know, because I was one of the ones that was skeptical about JR. I thought he did do a good job. The only thing, it might be a criticism, and this is slight, is that every once in a while, you got the feeling that both Excalibur and JR were trying to do play-by-play, when one should stick to play-by-play and giving you the facts, and one should stick to color. And that should, JR should do the color, and Excalibur kind of frame everything and kind of lead the narrative. But again, that's probably tough for JR because he did that role himself forever, right?
Yeah, and let's keep in mind, too, that like this is, you know, they've probably, like, this is the first time they've worked together. So if they're sounding this good on the very first time that they're working together, I got to assume that as they get their chemistry right, it's just going to sound, it'll get better. Yeah. I did want to throw in, though, really quickly, a couple of small criticisms, and this is more technical than anything else. So number one, I did hear a lot of feedback when people were talking on microphones, and I noticed it especially during the Bret Hart promo, which we'll get into. Not a big deal, just something I noticed. And the other thing I noticed, like just as a viewer working watching from home, I felt that the music could have been piped in a little bit better on the audio. You know, it had that kind of echoey sound when you know what I mean? Instead of coming through the speakers. So, and I think part of that though, is that, and I'm going to come back to the announcing on this as well. Like when I first heard Excalibur and Alex Marvez, right. Part of me was kind of like, well, they don't really sound that enthusiastic at all. And I think it's just because I'm so used to hearing, you know, Michael Cole be like, you know,
welcome to the freaking line.
Exactly.
Every single line is hyperbole with those guys. It's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked the one that they were a bit more low key.
No. And I'm not saying I didn't like it, but I wasn't used to it. So when I first heard it, I was kind of like, oh, this is a little mellow. But then as I like really started paying attention, I was like, no, these guys are good. Like we're fine here. Right. And then, and it was even, like even the music thing, like I'm just so used to hearing the music that loud when it's coming through my, you know, through the TV. So it was kind of weird not to hear that. But overall though, like those are my two biggest quote unquote criticisms.
Wow. Those are minimal ones too.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
The important stuff is that the cameramen were in the right places. They got all the shots. We got lots of replays. I mean, little ticks here and there, it wasn't so bad. I mean, I've seen a lot of promotions try to do pay-per-view that have been around longer than AEW, and it looks nowhere near as good. So I think they did really good for a first time.
Yeah, with all due respect to Ring of Honor and Madison Square Garden, I thought Double or Nothing looked way better than that Madison Square Garden show from a TV perspective.
All right, so let's get into the actual stuff here. We'll talk about the pre-show first, which was an hour before the pay-per-view. Here in Canada, at least on Shaw Direct, they showed it on the preview channel. So it was great. I just got to watch the whole thing on TV, which was good. Less fooling with the computer in my eyes is better because I am an old fuck. So
so I'll be the computer guy. So
yes. Well, you kind of do it for a living, Joe.
Well, like, so I watched the pay-per-view on Fight TV, so the pre-show was also on Fight TV for free. But like, the one thing I did notice, and again, this may have been my computer, so, you know, take this with a grain of salt, was I noticed at the beginning of the, specifically of the pay-per-view, My streaming was buffering quite a bit, and I wasn't sure if it was just me or if, like, you know, a whole bunch of people were hitting the servers. But for the most part, not very many technical problems streaming off Fight TV. So
good, good. Okay, so let's talk about the Casino Battle Royale. I love how it's a battle royale. Yep. And get things started here. We talked about the concept on the preview show. Groups of five coming in based on the suites of the deck of cards. So clubs, diamonds, hearts, spades. And then the last person would have the wild card and they would get to come in on their own. So, I mean, we can run through who was in it. I don't want to have to go through every elimination and stuff like that. But we had, first out anyways, we had Nakazawa, we had MJF, we had Sunny Days, Brandon Cutter, and Dustin Thomas, who is the wrestler with no legs. They started out on it. And, you know, one of the things coming out of this show, starting right here, and what we saw later, MJF, he is going to be one of the highlights of this promotion. There is no doubt about that. He did certain things throughout the night that, you know, the fans just love this guy. And just, he's a great old school dastardly kind of dick kind of heel. Where the first thing he did here in the Casino Battle Royale was go right after Dustin Thomas.
I thought that was hilarious. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, right away. And the crowd ate it up. They booed the shit out of him. Like, it was unbelievable. And we also had the crazy stuff with Nakazawa and the oil. He's almost like the Tori Yano or something, it seems like, of this particular match, where he's just there to kind of do comedy and stuff like that.
Like, it was weird because, like, of that first five, I don't know if you noticed, but I thought Nakazawa and Brandon Cutler actually got the best pop out of those five guys, right? I think Cutler because of the I think both of them because of the being the elite stuff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Brandon just getting the contract and Nakazawa and this weird Matt Jackson thing that's going on that they haven't even done yet.
Right.
But
So
I noticed that they had the two. And yeah, like, I agree with you, MJF. And I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about this as we talk more about the match. But MJF was, you know, he was this heat seeking missile the entire match. It was awesome.
Yes, he was. And then the next batch in the first batch were the clubs. I think the diamonds were the second match.
Yep.
Batch. So Jimmy Havoc, Joey Janela, Brian Pillman Jr., Sean Spears, and Sean Cassidy were the batch that time. And Sean Spears, aka Ty Dillinger from WWE, was certainly over very hot with the crowd when he came out.
Big time.
And the next group after that, and then again, I lost track after this whether these guys were the spades or
These guys were the hearts.
The hearts?
Yep.
The hearts? Okay, so we had Billy Gunn, Glacier, Jungle Boy, Mark Quinn, and Ace Romero. And, it is very funny to see Glacier, especially for me, because I distinctly remember when they pushed Glacier in WCW, and they ran those promos telling you he was coming for, I swear, more than a year. They ran forever. Yep. And then when he finally made the debut, it was nothing. And within weeks, he was jobbing and he was quickly gone. It was like one of those ones where I believe his buildup lasted longer than his actual appearance in the promotion. So there you go. So they had him in there as well. He actually used a mist, which I don't remember. Did he use a mist in WCW? I don't remember that.
He did it, and they made it sound like this was some old thing that he had done before, and I was like, I don't remember that. But
I don't remember him having a mist or anything
But it is Glacier, so like,
yeah. Wow, there you go. I think they just wanted to have fun with that character in general, right?
And here's, like, this is where because MJF went after him when Glacier came in, and I noticed.
That's right.
And you know, like, it looked like MJF was kind of, you know, whenever someone new would come in, he would be, you know, sort of the welcoming committee. That's where I was like, yeah, he's talking a lot. He reminds me kind of a Kevin Owen, just keeps going.
Yeah.
This is where I really started noticing MJF.
Yeah, it's true.
In the match.
The next group was Luchasaurus, Sunny Kiss, Tommy Dreamer.
Marco Stunt.
Oh yeah, right. And I seem to be missing. Who else? And who was the other one?
Marco Stunt was that short guy. He was kind of your You know what though? It's funny. There was one other person, and I completely missed who it was. And I think now let me go back to a bit of the commentary, and you know, one of the things that I did notice about this match was, like, I remember there would be times where they would be saying something, and then, you know, a group would come in, but then someone would get eliminated, and then the announcers really wouldn't, like, right. they would kind of get to it after the fact. So and I remember, like, the one main example that I remember specifically was, I think it was Luchasaurus. It was eliminating. Luchasaurus during the match eliminates Private Party, but the announcers didn't mention it until about like 3 minutes later. And I'm like, so there was all this stuff going on, and I just kind of felt at this time anyways, that the announcers weren't like, they weren't funneling the information properly. It was a little weird.
Did you feel the concept was too overwhelming to watch? Like, because I kind of felt, yeah, the same thing. It's kind of like too much at once to have, like, five guys come in all at once, you know?
Well, I think I'm okay with the five guys coming in, but you can't have five guys coming in and then three eliminations happening all at the same time. You got to space that out better. Yeah. So conceptually, I didn't have a problem with it, but I think what I'm getting at is, again, it was, you know, the spades are coming in or someone's coming in, and then all of a sudden you've got three guys going out, and it's, you know, I don't care how good you are as an announcer, you're not going to be able to cover all that in, you know, like that sound bite. So I'll admit, I didn't mind the concept. I'm going to say the jury is still out though, because I wonder if they could have booked it better, you know, and they could have spaced things out a lot better.
I mean, and I think even, you know, because the thing about this Battle Royal, you have to remember too, is that obviously it got changed after what happened with Hangman Page and Pac. It's always, because if you think about this, Joe, the stipulation that the winner of this match would get a number one contender spot was not added till after the whole Hangman and Pac thing had gone down, right? And that match had been taken out. So it's obviously this, I think this really was supposed to be more of just kind of a fun opening match with some seriousness and some humor mixed in. But I think after what happened with Page, they had to kind of go, oh, okay, well, we need to do something with this, and we're gonna put Adam Page in this, because he ends up being the last one after the four groups are out. He got card number 21.
Right. And
I found it an interesting match because you had the humor, you know, the Nakazawa with the oil. I mean, you had the crazy stuff like Joey Janela getting a cigarette stapled to his forehead by Jimmy Havoc. There was some other comedy stuff in there, but I thought, by the end, by the time that Paige came out and they put him in there, I thought they did a good idea of kind of trying to make it look a little bit more serious after that point, you know, like Luchasaurus chokeslamming Joey Janela through a table.
Yeah.
And again, it gets into a bit more of a serious thing. So, you know, it had this kind of interesting dynamic of being somewhat humor-based early on, but then getting more serious as it went. And I also thought visually, they went about it different than most times when you see a battle royal where it's just guys constantly kind of scrapping with each other. They would do it almost so where everybody would kind of all lay each other out and you would actually only have one or two guys kind of doing stuff. And I thought that was an interesting approach because it made it easier to focus on two guys if you wanted to do something specific, if you had everybody else kind of laid out, which they don't really do in a WWE battle royal.
No, I, you know what, that's a good point. I noticed that too, because there was one, I think it was, which part was it? I can't remember, but what I did notice was everyone was kind of lying around the ring, and I was like, oh, okay, I've never seen that before, you know?
Yeah, I liked that visually because it looked different, right?
Oh, you know what though? Speaking of comedy, really quickly, I wanted to throw this in there. When Orange Cassidy came in, because he was the 22nd man.
Yeah,
and does his kicks to Tommy Dreamer. I was dying. Oh, I thought that was brilliant.
Very you know funny. I mean? Very funny. Again, they know at this point that they have to satisfy their hardcore fan base, and they are doing that by these little pokes at the WWE and these little parody things like this. Yes, I thought this was great, the way he did the kicks and stuff like that. The most casual wrestler ever, you know, kind of a slacker.
And you know what, too? Like, the good part about it, too, was he wasn't in the match that long. He got his spots in. Exactly. He did his kip up, and then we were done, right?
Done, exactly. Yeah. So the finish came down to Paige, MJF, Luchasaurus, and Jimmy Havoc. And so MJF snuck to the outside, that kind of classic battle royal kind of thing. Luchasaurus took out Havoc. And then MJF thought he took out Paige and won, but Paige came back and tossed him to win and gets the shot at the winner of Omega and Jericho. So, again, it's obvious that after the stuff with Hangman and Pac fell apart, they decided to do this, but a good way. And, you know, I'm not surprised that they would want to put Paige in the title picture. I mean, he is one of their main guys.
No, I agree. And you know what? And again, I don't know if you noticed this, Dan, but part of me, and again, this is why I was sort of a little standoffish with the announcing at the beginning, was that so when MJF got thrown out, right, and it was like Luchasaurus and Paige left in the ring, I think it was, right?
Yep.
One of them said, oh, there's only, you know, two people left. And then I think it was Alex Marvis was like, no, there's three, right? And part of me was like, was the announcers not up to speed on the storyline? Because, like, it sounded like they weren't supposed to mention MJF because, he was supposed to be out of the ring and you were supposed to not notice him. But I'm pretty sure it was Marvez said, no, there's three left. And I was like, no, I think you're not supposed to say that.
Because, well,
you know what I mean? Like it was, I guess what I'm getting at was that part was really, really awkward. And that's why I brought it up. Because it was something I noted when, you know, because like that was the year, for example, when Roman Reigns won and then Rusev runs into the ring, you know, like that, remember that Royal Rumble?
Yeah, right,
so it kind of, it reminded me of that. But it didn't sound like the announcers, and specifically Marvez, was up to speed on the storyline. So he kind of was like, no, there's three of them. Oh, wait, no, there's two. And I'm like, oh, dude, like, you know.
Okay, so after that, we had the Kylie Rae interview. And this turned into us seeing the two librarians, Peter Avalon and Leva Bates, in their gimmicks. I'm going to leave this with you because you seem to be really keen on this.
Again, it was stupid and I loved it. I don't know why I can't explain it, man. But Smiley Kylie Rae came out and was getting interviewed by Alicia A. And then, you know, Peter Avalon comes out and he's like, shh. And then Leva Bates comes out, does the exact same thing. And then they just end up shushing each other. And again, I by all rights, I should think that's stupid. And I don't know why. I popped hard for it. So,
I didn't mind it because they have been building it, but I felt the shh-ing went on too long.
Yeah.
We got it. Now you're just kind of pounding it into the ground here. They should have shopped a few shushes earlier, and I think it would have been better.
Yeah, no. And you know what? I'll give you that because you're right. They did do it a while, but I'm invested in this storyline, so I really want to see what happens.
Okay. Well, then we didn't see them again for the rest of the show. So
yeah.
Who knows? They might be something we don't even see fully until the television gets going in the fall. We'll just have to see what they do there.
Yep.
Now, the other main match on the warm-up show, well, the only other match on the warm-up show, was Sammy Guevara against Kip Sabian. Sammy, I mean, he looks a little young, but, I mean, he does play the smarmy heel quite well. I love...
Oh, he plays it really well.
Yeah, I thought, you know, the stuff where he's looking really bored while he's waiting for Kip to get to the ring and stuff like that, I thought that was very well done. Not a long match, about, I don't know if it was even 10 minutes, but, again, I thought it was a good opener, and it introduces people who might not be familiar with these two guys to what they can do.
Yeah, no, it was it was a good match. You know, I noted out a few things like Kip did like in the beginning of the match there was a lot of good back and forth, you know, just kind of some wrestling, you know, reversals, that kind of stuff. Kip did a nice Hurricanrana after running the ropes. Sammy did a backflip over Kip Sabian, which I thought that, wow, that's really impressive. I noted that Sabian did a dragon leg whip because that's one of my favorite moves ever. There was like a moonsault attempt. Oh yeah. Okay. This was the one spot that I thought was ridiculous. So Guevara goes for a moonsault off the top rope. Sabian moves. So then Guevara tries a standing moonsault attempt and Kip moves again, but then he lands like a standing shooting star. And I was like, wow, that is just insane athleticism going on over there.
Right.
That was really cool. There was another one where Guevara draped Sabian over the barricade and then he hit his shooting star press onto his back. I was like, wow, that is nuts. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It was good. I thought, you know, kind of after the mass craziness of the Battle Royal, it was good to have kind of a short athletic match in there, I think, to finish off the pre-show and lead into the pay-per-view. Like, I got a real impression that they really took some time to lay everything out and to figure out where to put everything in this show, because the show had really good pace.
And I mean, I think this match was only like 10 minutes or something like that. But it was just a good, short opening type match to get the crowd warmed up, had some really good moves and it was just a really good match.
The pre-show ended with Cody, Brandy, the Bucks, and Kenny Omega coming out, and the crowd did a huge AEW chant. And I loved this. Again, you know, a lot of people think, well, you shouldn't be poking fun at the WWE. You should be worrying about your own product. But you know what? This is going to be part of their product, I think. And I thought it was great the way they made fun of how WWE exaggerates crowd numbers and how they over-exaggerate every number for every pay-per-view. And these guys came out and were kind of doing the same thing and making fun of each other. So I thought
that was hilarious.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I thought it was
the only other one thing I'll note was that when JR came out to the broadcast position, how he started in the backstage. I'm like, hey, this is almost like Goldberg, except the no bodyguards and pyro.
But they
just kind of reminded me of that. I thought that was funny.
Now, if you want that entire podcast and to hear those guys each and every week, along with that commercial-free versions of Sunday Night's Main Event, and on top of that, my trivia show and the midweek markout, all of that is available to you at patreon.com/SNMEradio. The show that you were listening to, it actually is a 90-minute show. So go sign up right now at patreon.com/SNMEradio and get all of our great programming each and every week. And you know what? It's only $1 a week, $4 a month. That is it. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. And I'll talk to you tonight on Sunday Night's Main Event. Don't you dare miss it.